after the first surgery, 20 hours later, my daughter was at the foot of my bed. And I said to her, I know who my donor is. And she says, what are you talking about? And I said, well, there was a car accident near Santa Barbara and three football players were in it. And my donor was the kicker. And my daughter was saying, what are you on? You're on meds, Dad. You don't know what you're saying. And I said, no, I know. So she went upstairs to the waiting room and told the people in the waiting room this, what I had just said. And they looked it up on, they did a Google search about car accident near Santa Barbara football player. And sure enough, it popped up that there was a car accident, as I said, and there were three football players in the car accident, and the driver was the kicker.
Stay connected to gratitude. Hit the follow button right now and join thousands of listeners tuning in each week. We're the Gratitude Seekers. Come join us. Hi, Gratitude Seeker. Welcome to a new episode of the Gratitude Podcast. Today with us, we have Jim Stavis. Jim was the first person to ever survive a triple organ transplant. When he was 17, he was told that he'd be lucky to live past his 50th birthday. At that time, he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. Doctors expected him to be plagued by kidney and heart disease, blindness, and amputation before succumbing to diabetes at a young age. He recently celebrated his 65th birthday. And I'm a bit emotional about this because I think this is quite amazing. And I'm really happy to have him here with us. And even more so, he was able to not just survive, but thrive. And he was able to create a business that's worth over $25 million while raising a family and staying resilient in the face of this incredible adversity. Also, he wrote a book, When Hope is Your Only Option, and an award-winning documentary, Source of Hope. And I think Jim is like the perfect guest for the Gratitude Podcast. And I'm really curious where this conversation will go. Jim, welcome to the Gratitude Podcast.
Thank you, Georgian. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So firstly, let us know more about you that I maybe forgot to mention or that you feel would be interesting for our listeners.
Well, you did a very nice overview of the story, which at a very young age, I was given a pretty dreadful forecast for my life, which in many ways characterized much of my life in that I knew that I had a shorter lifespan in which to kind of do all the things that I had hoped to accomplish, but I would have to do so in a much shorter time frame, which in some ways could have affected me in one of two ways. It could have stricken me with fear and kind of paralyzed me and prevented me from living life, but instead I chose to use it as a motivator so that I could get my life in order and have a successful life. And so in some ways, the diabetes diagnosis, which back then was pretty gloomy, I actually used to my advantage.
It was actually a blessing in disguise somehow, right?
It turned out to be one. Of course, at the time, it was a pretty scary forecast. And I really, at the age of 17, I was not really a boy anymore, or really a man. I was kind of in that teenage stage where I was trying to figure out my life, and I was there wasn't much that my parents could do to help me. So it was pretty much all on me, which wasn't necessarily a bad thing, but pretty scary at the time.
I'm sure. But I am very curious, like the fact that you knew that you weren't going to, or you knew, you, people told you that you weren't going to live as much as other people. Did that make you enjoy life more, like be more present, enjoy the fact that you are still alive and you can still do things?
I think in some ways it did, but at the same time, I was just trying to live a normal life. It wasn't like at the time I was trying to climb Mount Everest. I was just trying to become kind of a normal person as much as I could, and just didn't want the diabetes to define my life. I wanted to just be that I happened to have diabetes, but that wasn't the single most important thing going on at the time.
Wow. And you managed to do it. Like, I think this is quite amazing that in spite of that, you didn't just manage to survive, but to actually thrive and to make something amazing from your life. And now that you're speaking, you've written a book and you're sharing this with the world while being the CEO of a big company, this is incredible. I think it's very generous of you to do this for the world, and I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I feel incredibly blessed, and I could have never have imagined that the life that I would have gone the way that it did.
That's a very beautiful perspective. But take us back a little bit and tell us how life was for you, like when you were 17, 18, because we might have a harder time picturing how it is to go through that. And I think it would be very helpful for us to manage to go through the journey with you, you know?
Well, I think it's important for me to note, especially for your audience, that diabetes today is a very different animal than it was back when I was diagnosed in the early 1970s, because the technology has changed, and today you can live a very normal life. And diabetes has grown 5 times from what it was back when I was a teenager. And when I was diagnosed with it, there wasn't the technology and the management that they have today. And so it doesn't mean that if you were diagnosed today that you would have the same outcome that I had back then.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So when I was diagnosed, they had research that would tell exactly how long my life would be, when I would start having heart and kidney problems, and all of the other things that came with diabetes. So I not only had to manage the disease itself, but I had to kind of live with the realities of what it might do to my life down the road. So as it turns out, as my life unfolded, for the most part, they were right. As I was in my 40s, I was starting to experience some of the effects that the diabetes had taken on my body throughout my life, and I was starting to have problems with my kidneys, with the blood vessels in my eyes, and then ultimately in the arteries, which caused heart problems. So it affects your entire cardiovascular system on a very gradual, day-by-day basis, and in the end, it takes its toll on the human body.
Mm-hmm.
So as it were, in like 1997, I had an event. I was 42 years old and I was vacationing with my family up in a lake here in Southern California called Lake Arrowhead. And we were there in the summertime with my family, and we were doing all the things that you do at camp, swimming and hiking, and we went on this what's called a ropes course, which was doing kind of paramilitary events, climbing trees, swinging on ropes. And we were up there with a very close family friend, up in the woods, high altitude. And on the last event of the day, I was at 20 feet in the air at the top of a tree, and my heart stopped. I was in a harness, and fortunately, and so they brought me down to the ground, and my close childhood friend, whose name was John, began doing CPR, and we were far away from any kind of medical hospital or paramedics. So my friend John and one other gentleman had given me CPR and essentially brought me back to life. I was literally, it was a near-death experience for me. I'd been out for about 30 minutes. Wow. And what was interesting was John, who had lost his mother the year before, was, you know, feverishly trying to bring me back to life. And after quite some time of giving me CPR, he had just about lost hope and took a moment to look skyward. And all of a sudden he heard his mother clearly saying, "Don't stop, John, you can save him." And so he went back down and gave me the next breath of air, and I came to life. John, it was a spiritual moment that forever in his life he'll never forget. Yeah. And for me, it was a moment that I could never remember because I was lying on the ground up in the hills. So it's that one day in time is kind of a moment that I will never forget. And for my friend John, it was a moment that he too could never forget. So we're kind of bonded through this time, and we speak every year on that date, just to reflect back on what an incredible day it was for the two of us.
That's
so, so I survived. They took me down the mountain, and I was to learn that one of my arteries was 95% blocked, and wow, which would require them to do some an angioplasty back at that time. And I was told that had it happened at another moment in time, perhaps when I was by myself or without a group of people around me, that especially my friend that gave me CPR, I wouldn't be alive today. So it's a condition called sudden death, which is your first cardiac event oftentimes is your last cardiac event. So I look back on that moment and think how fortunate it was that I was, first of all, where I was when it happened and with who I was with, because it could have happened at another place and time and I wouldn't have survived. So that was kind of a big perspective maker for me. And I'd say that probably on the subject of gratitude, that was probably right up there as number one.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. And by the way, after that, how did it change you? Like, what things did you appreciate more in your life after that event?
I think the biggest thing was that it made me realize, first of all, how tentative life can be. And the fact is that it can end just in a moment's time. And so for that reason alone, you really have to appreciate the fact that you're still here, because, you know, one minute you are and the next minute you can be gone. And so that was a big thing for me. And then, and I think secondly, as far as the diabetes was concerned, I think it made me realize that those forecasts that I had been given many years ago had been true, and that I needed to do everything within my power to try and preserve the whatever life I had left, because, you know, this was pretty serious stuff, and I was lucky just to be alive.
Yeah. So that's quite a moment. And the interesting thing is that it wasn't the only moment of that kind in your life. I know that you are the first person to ever survive a triple organ transplant, and I love the conversation that you had with the doctor when you were asked if you want to do it. And I think that's incredible. Can you tell us a little bit about that moment?
So this sequence that I had just told you about had happened in 1997. And it was about 7 years after that I was on another trip with my family. Seems like I shouldn't travel. So I was up, my daughter went to school in Madison, Wisconsin, and I was going to her, it was a parents' weekend because she was in college. So we were up visiting, and suddenly I was, my kidneys had failed. I went into what's called congestive heart failure, where your heart is no longer pumping enough blood to the kidneys and the kidneys don't function. So I found myself in a hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. And in some ways, they didn't know how I was going to get home, because I was in critical enough condition where flying 3,000 miles was not the best thing to do. So I had to essentially convince the doctors to let me go. And my doctors back home had assured them that they would take responsibility, that if something were to happen, that they would take responsibility for it. Wow. So this became almost the new chapter in my life. And this is in the year 2004. So I had to go on to kidney dialysis, which was a new phase of my life, to keep me alive. And I went to Cedars-Sinai Hospital, where there was a doctor whose name was P.K. Shaw. And Dr. Shaw was the head of cardiology at Cedars. And he looked at me and he said, well, you need a new heart, you need a new kidney, and best case, you need a new pancreas to rid you of your diabetes and to preserve the organs that we would transplant into you. The only problem is we've never done a surgery like that, and I don't know if it's ever been done anywhere. And I looked at him and I said, well, then I'm going to be the first one. And he kind of smiled at me and thought, well, this guy has no idea what he's talking about, but okay, if you're good, I'm good. So we kind of, my wife looked at me like I was an alien, and but we went forward, and that was ultimately what happened. So I sit and think about that moment. I reflect on that moment because I'm not exactly sure what gave me the confidence and the self-assuredness that I was going to be the first one. I call it my Neil Armstrong moment, where kind of moving into territory that I had never been before. But all I can tell you is that I believe that it came from a place which stems from that first meeting with the doctor when I was 17, mm-hmm. where I was told all of these things that were going to happen. And I believed that the whole reason for why I was put on this journey was for that moment when I would be confronted with the triple organ transplant. And I was sure that that was the way this was to play out. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of my destiny, is the way I viewed it. And the doctor who was instrumental in making this all happen was that Dr. P.K. Shaw, because together we kind of went forward and actually made it a reality. So, and fortunately today, so in 2005, we did the kidney and heart from a single donor. And then in 2006, came back and did the pancreas from a second donor. So they actually, it was three surgeries, but over the course of two years. So that was my transplant moment. And again, this is gratitude step number two, the fact that in a way I was told that I shouldn't be alive, and I was somewhat defying the odds. And here to tell the story. So I feel very blessed in that regard as well.
Yeah, definitely. And so do I, for the fact that we're able to talk about these experiences and to view life from a different angle. And on this topic, I'm really curious how being a heart recipient redefines the meaning of a heart for you.
Well, that's a good question, Georgian, a very good question. So the notion that our heart is kind of the center of our being, the center of emotion, the center of love, it really is probably the most important organ that we have in our body. Mm-hmm. For a number of reasons, and it's the symbol of life itself. So in a way, I was being given an organ, and I say given as a gift, to be able to live life. And I think that when you get close to death, it changes the way you live your life, because life never looks the same. You have a different perspective in the way that you live your life. And so for me, obviously a kidney was important, and a pancreas was incredibly important for me because it rid me of the lifelong problem I had had with the diabetes. But the heart was something that was really special. What makes it quite unique as well, to integrate another part of the story, is that I woke up from surgery after the first surgery 20 hours later.
And my
daughter was at the foot of my bed, and I said to her, "I know who my donor is." And she says, what are you talking about? And I said, "Well, there was a car accident near Santa Barbara, and three football players were in it. And my donor was the kicker." And my daughter was saying, "What are you on? You're on meds, Dad. You don't know what you're saying." And I said, "No, I know." So she went upstairs to the waiting room and told the people in the waiting room this, what I had just said. And they looked it up they did a Google search about car accident near Santa Barbara football player. And sure enough, it popped up that there was a car accident, as I said, and there were three football players in the car accident, and the driver was the kicker. So strangely, I had either some kind of premonition, or I had overheard a conversation during the 20 hours of surgery, but I knew who my donor was, which is very strange because the process is a very anonymous process. In fact, Cedars was not happy to hear that I somehow knew this. and so as the story unfolds, I was aware of who the donor family was, and it's rare that the recipient actually knows or has contact with the donor family. So after the surgery, I was contacted by the donor family, and they wanted to meet me. So we had a reunion between my family and theirs. It was a 17-year-old boy who had been a soccer star and been the field goal kicker on their football team. and they invited me to go to what would have been his high school graduation. Oh, so we met, and we ultimately went to, it was about 150 miles away from us, but we went to the graduation and met the family. We went to the site where the accident had occurred, and we went to the cemetery where he was buried. And it was quite a day, another day that I'll never forget, because to meet a family that was so immediately stricken with an overnight situation where one day their son is with them and the next day he's not. And they were the courageous family that gave me the gift of life so that I could continue to live and share my message of hope with countless other people. So it's I owe a tremendous amount to this family. That they're called the Fabing family is the name of the family, and Bryce Fabing was the boy that had passed away. So I felt incredibly blessed, again, that very few people have an opportunity to meet their donor family. And in my case, I have a continuing relationship with them. I see them every year. We do a charity walk together on behalf of Donate Life, and I support all of their charities that they have started in their son's name. So it's actually been a very nice relationship. In fact, I rode on the Rose Parade float a couple years ago, holding a picture of Bryce as we were going down the Rose Parade float on the Tournament of Roses Parade, which you may or may not be aware of. It's a New Year's Day event that we have here in California. So again, very blessed to be able to know where the organs came from, and to be able to understand all of what my relationship means to this other family. That when we get together, they put their heads on my chest to listen to their son's heart beating in my chest. That's a pretty unique relationship that we have, one that I could have never have predicted.
Wow. This is just amazing. And I can only imagine what they went through, and also the gratitude that they feel by knowing you and by being able to hear their son's heart beating. And I think this is just amazing. And wow, I'm blown away by the story and by how strong this feeling is, and how interesting life is, you know, like being in this situation, and the fact that somehow his life continued through you and continues through you is something really beautiful, and it really makes you think about life in general and what it means.
Well, it's something that affects countless other people. What I realize is that this story is much bigger than just me, because his death affected an entire community and countless people, and my survival has done the same for countless people and a community. And so I realize that this story is not just about a single person. It's a much bigger story than that. And again, there's another reason to have gratitude and great perspective. Those are the two things that I feel are the two biggest things that were affected by this event.
Mm-hmm.
I view life differently, and I have an incredible amount of gratitude.
Yeah. And by the way, you've already mentioned some people in your life that you're grateful for. could you tell us other people that weren't in the conversation until now that you're very grateful for in your life?
Absolutely. The one that comes to mind, I was fortunate enough when I started my business back in 1988, I started with a partner whose name was Doug Carpenter, and Doug and I were great friends, almost like brothers, and in starting our company together. And we built something pretty successful and special. And Doug, I couldn't have done it without him, because while I was going through a lot of these health trials, Doug was able to kind of manage the business without me, and we both kind of prevailed together. And suddenly in 2014, Doug had a trial of his own, in that he acquired an infection in the hospital. And he had always been the healthy partner, whereas I had been the one with the health problems. And so I had to experience, unfortunately, watching what this infection did to his body. And I was doing everything I could to try and help him manage through a pretty difficult time. And after 2 years, he passed away. And so it was a pretty difficult, it was incredibly difficult for me, both on a personal level and certainly on a business level, because here was the guy that, you know, that he was always the one that had stood for me during my trials and tribulations, and yet he was unable to kind of overcome the adversity that affected his life, which was kind of twisted in a way. I could never quite make sense out of how that happens. But again, life is very tenuous. You just don't know what's going to be. I used to always say, you never know what a day will bring, because it's true.
Yeah. And it's even more a good reason to feel grateful for what we have right now, and for our life today, and to be present and to enjoy this moment, because like you were saying, you never know. And it's not the best idea to keep waiting for things in the future to be happy, but we can be happy right now.
Absolutely. Actually, one of the, in my book, which you were nice enough to mention in the front end, which is When Hope Is Your Only Option, the second to last chapter is called Counting Your Blessings. and in that chapter, I talk about that, first of all, counting your blessings is much better than counting your sorrows. and that we would all be better off, rather than waiting as we tend to do, which is to count our blessings after they occur, but spend a little time in the present and count your blessings today, because again, you don't know what tomorrow will be. And I think that it's an important thing, is to kind of live in the moment and be aware of all that you have and all that you've been given, because it's a great place to start, and it's a great place to be.
Yeah, exactly. And since we're nearing the end of our time together, I didn't want us to forget about the story that you mentioned before going live.
Yes. So I end my book with an epilogue, which is, and it's called The Lucky Guy. And the story was based on my father-in-law, who, my wife's father, who is now 94 years old.
Oh my God.
He grew up in what was then Czechoslovakia, in a small town. And unfortunately, his timing was not so good, because it was during the time of the war and Hitler. Mm-hmm. And he and his family were sent off to Auschwitz when he was a young teenager, kind of the same age that I was when I was given my forecast of doom from the doctors, but he was given a, you know, he lived the life back then, which was not a very favorable time to be. And so, but somehow he survived, and his most of, or I shouldn't say most, all of his family perished during that time, and he had been taken from Auschwitz to Bergen-Belsen, and but somehow survived. And when he was when they were liberated, he went back to his hometown, and his hometown didn't exist anymore. Everybody had perished. So as a young man, he was invited to go to fight in the Israeli War of Independence. So he went to what was then Palestine and fought for Israel to be liberated in the War of Independence, which again was just an amazing story of survival. And the reason that I tell the story really is because, you know, as much as we all have our own stories of adversity, there's always others that have more adversity. And sometimes yeah. we don't think that way. And so one day we were at my house, and I was showing him the documentary of Source of Hope, which was the story of my donor family and me and my transplant story. And he watches it, and afterwards he says to me, "So Jim, with 120,000 people on the transplant waiting list, how were you able to get 3 organs?" And I said, that's a great question, Bernie. That's a great question. So let me ask you a question, because I always like asking a question with a question, or answering a question with a question. And I said to him, "So Bernie, let me ask you, of the 6 million Jews that died in the war, and the 12 million people that were killed in the war, how did you survive?" And I was expecting quite a spiritual or a philosophical answer. And with a sheepish grin, he said to me, "I was lucky." And I looked at him and I said, "So was I." So at the end of the day, with all that goes on and all of the adversity, maybe it just boils down to who's lucky and who's not.
Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.
So yeah. I just thought that was kind of a fitting story, especially for the area that you live in today.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And while I believe in luck as well, I think a more of interesting way of putting it, or a more spiritual way of putting it is that you are blessed. And
yes, I would agree.
Yeah, and I think that it's a beautiful attitude to have, the fact that you feel special for God, for the universe, and you appreciate the gifts that you've been given, the fact that you are alive and you are still able to do these amazing things. And it's a great reminder for us all that even though our adversities might not be as big, we're still lucky. We're still blessed, you know?
It's true. But I think that everybody, some people are perhaps luckier than others, but in some ways we make our own luck. But at the end of the day, it's hard to say, you know, why things happen the way that they do, but you need to take notice of the fact that that we have what we have, and be happy for that.
Exactly.
Be blessed for that.
Exactly. So we're almost at the end of our time together, and I feel like we could talk for hours.
We could.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, where can our audience find you? Where can they find your book? Where can they see you speak?
The book, which again is When Hope Is Your Only Option, is available at most booksellers like Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I did an audio version of it in my voice for Audible, which is, again, Amazon. As far as I have a website, which is jimstavis.com, and I have on Facebook, Jim Stavis Speaks page, where I do a lot of my posting of blogs, and I'm involved in a lot of community activities and such that I post. As far as the speaking goes, it's not as if I'm on tour or anything, so
not yet.
not yet, but I do a lot of speaking on behalf of Donate Life and the organization that helps promote organ transplants and whatnot. So that's a big part of my speaking career. And I'm hoping to be able to use these podcasts as a way to kind of kick off my speaking career.
Wonderful, wonderful. I think it's great that you're giving back and you're inspiring us to appreciate life and to feel blessed in our own way. And for the fact that you're bringing hope to people and getting us to see life from a different perspective. So I really appreciate you for that. And I really appreciate you for being here with us and for being so present and for sharing so many amazing things from your life that I'm imagining wasn't very easy to share.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed speaking with you, and I wish only the best for you and your audience. I think the term gratitude is probably, you couldn't have picked a better name for a podcast series, because we all need more gratitude in our life.
Definitely. I totally agree.
Hey, Gratitude Seeker, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this interview. I really appreciate it. And if you could think of one person that would also benefit from it, share it with them. It might actually be the inspiration that they need to make their day or maybe even their life much better. Thank you so much once again. This has been Georgian Benta. Don't forget to keep seeking and spreading gratitude.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.